Welcome back to Motherlode Views. I'm BJ Hansen, your host. We're focusing this weekend on Resiliency Village. We're joined by the executive director, Mark Dykin, who's getting us up to speed on the project. We talked a lot about the property that's been acquired in the Big Hill area and also some of the opposition that's been occurred in the recent weeks on the first segment. Mark, I'd like to ask you a little bit more about the concept and kind of the vision of Resiliency Village. What are the types of programs that the people who will come to Resiliency Village can be involved with?
That's a great question, BJ. And as I mentioned before, the issue of resolving trauma and just having the ability to look at that with people and address that issue, which is the core issue for so many people who find themselves with housing difficulty. And so what we've concentrated on is the kind of expression that science and best practices tells us can be really healing for folks. So that's part of the reason why this property is so wonderful. Everyone who has visited so far comments on the sense of serenity and peace that you feel. So just being there on its own is a service. We've reestablished the garden and the agricultural products. Those are agricultural endeavors that are already there, and we plan to expand those. And then each person who comes to Resiliency Village goes through an assessment process and then works with our case managers and navigators who help them navigate to find out what their goals are and how to get them. So some people really need to finish their high school education. So we're partnering with Tuolumne County Superintendent's Office to provide adult ed services. If there are children involved, we will certainly make sure that they're getting to school. We've worked with, we have an incredible bank of volunteers. We literally have doctors, counselors, therapists who work in various arts and music and things like that who have all come forth and said, we want to be part of this solution. And so each person will have an individualized case plan that will work on the things that they need to work on to heal that trauma and then to return them to the ability to have the dignity to work and be self-sustaining people. So no one thing is going to fit everyone. And then often, and this is a concern that we've heard a lot, what are you going to do about people's substance use? What are you going to do about alcohol and all these things? So, of course, best practice is what's known as low barrier shelter. So people can come to the shelter or into the village when we have space for them, no matter what their current condition. But then when we do this assessment, we look and see, well, if substance use is your issue, we have to develop a plan for that. And some people, just by being in the right place, maybe they're not that far into addiction or the place would be enough to trigger that release and they no longer need to use to, you know, cover their pain or whatever it is. But others are going to need either really intensive service on site, or it just might not be the right place for them, in which case we would refer them to off-site, either inpatient or outpatient services for whatever that issue might be. And so we're lucky to have partners like the Red Feather Clinic, which is part of the Matheson Health Group, amazing people in their work with folks who suffer from addiction issues. And those types of services, when given to people and given the option and having the safety of a place to work, are some of the most successful in getting people back into self-sustaining living, including being able to provide their own housing. And for those who have, you know, we have a few folks who, as I mentioned before, came out of some of the camps already. Some of them are elderly and have disabilities. They may stay at Resiliency Village for years, and that would be another part of the program. It's just a safe place for them to live and access the health services that they need.
On the issue of trauma and getting through those experiences, do you find that, like, the gardening and whether it be arts really help people move through those things?
Definitely. That's a great starting place. You know, it can be very difficult for people to talk about the time their uncle beat them up or when their parents kicked them out of the house or the time that they were sexually assaulted. For a lot of people, those kinds of talk therapies are just too difficult. So by working through with these other methods, we can touch the parts of them that have been hurt and sort of expose that. And then when they're ready, we have some very high-level counselors who specialize in that kind of work. And move through that progression towards their healing. So again, no two people are the same. So everyone has to be met where they are and given what they need to achieve the goals that the navigators will help set for them.
Exploring trauma, do you feel that that makes Resiliency Village much different than other than just, say, a homeless shelter or a transitional housing location?
That is definitely something that sets us apart. In our research to putting this entire project together, our board president, Dr. Brenda Chapman, visited a number of tiny home communities and other places. And for 17 years, I was a homeless education liaison, attended a lot of conferences, have visited and checked in on a lot of places that serve homeless people. And throughout the, if you want to call it the homeless services community, understanding trauma and treating trauma has become probably the number one effective method of reaching people and helping them to heal and get past what it is that's causing them to struggle with housing. So yes, no question about that. And Dr. Chapman and I worked together. She was the superintendent when I was the director at Jamestown Family Resource Center, the Jamestown School District. And we worked really hard to bring trauma-informed practices to the school and greatly reduced our suspension rates, our expulsion rates, increased our attendance, saw a change on our campus by training teachers and getting people to understand that trauma is really at the root of a lot of unwanted behaviors in children, and that continues on through the rest of your life. And so instead of always asking the question, what's wrong with this person, we change our lens a little bit and say, what happened to this person? And when we start to address what happened to the person is when we start to see changes. If we're always reacting to an unwanted behavior, we're too far downstream. What we have to do is get upstream and start understanding what might trigger that behavior, what might cause it, what is the root of that behavior, and start to work on that. And that's where we have some success in actually changing and having a different outcome.
So Resiliency Village, being new in Tuolumne County, you have some data and some firsthand experience that you just explained to show that the concept is one that is successful.
Oh, absolutely. As I say, for 17 years, that's been my job, is to work with families who are unsheltered or struggling in that way. And I was also a foster education liaison, and so I spent a lot of time working with foster kids and their families. And again, that's one of the most traumatized populations that we have, our foster youth. And there's no question about it that understanding that trauma is a big leg up in if you're the person providing the service.
No, Resiliency Village obviously is wide-ranging, but on the issue of homelessness, what's kind of your observation in Tuolumne County when it comes to homelessness? Is it still a growing problem, or has it leveled off? Have you kind of made any notices?
I don't think there's anyone who doesn't notice that there are more unsheltered people all around California and certainly in Tuolumne County, and the problem continues to grow. One of the things that really makes this work difficult is that no matter how well we case manage and get people ready to go, there's no available housing. And BJ, that's really one of the most difficult parts of this, is especially affordable housing, and especially affordable housing for extremely low income people is almost non-existent. And so again, we can only be part of a continuum of effort to really make a dent in this. But I am concerned for what might happen if rent or eviction moratorium ends without some kind of increase in housing or without some kind of way to relocate the folks who are going to be facing eviction. If that ends, that we will certainly see an uptick in unsheltered people, and especially families with children.
Does Resiliency Village work pretty closely with other agencies and nonprofits in the county to collectively look at that big issue?
Yes, we are members of the Tuolumne County Homeless Task Force, which now is a works under the Board of Supervisors. So we're members of that organization or that task force. And so we are networked with a lot of the other service providers. We certainly are connected to a few of the faith-based communities that help us provide food and support in that way. And we're working with a number of different agencies coordinated in terms of getting out there to, again, the camps that already exist to just provide some level of support there, but also just in a general understanding of what's going on with people who are living on the margins, either unsheltered or very close to it.
Need to take one more break. We're talking with Mark Dykin, the Executive Director of Resiliency Village, on this weekend's Motherlode Views. Motherlode Views is brought to you by Nate's Tree Service, where no job is too big or too small. I'm BJ Hansen, your host. We'll be back with our final segment in just a minute.